Vectis Radio.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight.
Well, this week I'm here with Jonathan Bacon. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm fine. Very nice to be here.
It is nice to hear what you've been up to lately, but we're going to start with, were you born here on the island?
No, I wasn't born here. I was born in the Battle Hospital in the town of Reading in Berkshire.
Right. You don't remember much about it, I suspect.
Not an awful lot, no.
And did you go to school in Reading?
We moved to the island when I was 10, so we actually lived outside Reading, a little village called, well, it was a little village then called Swallowfield. So I went to school a couple of places near there.
So that's your primary school?
Primary, yes. Yeah.
And senior school you went to?
By that time, that's when I moved to the island, or we moved to the island, and I went to ride school.
All right. Did you enjoy it there?
It wasn't the happiest time in my life, contrary to what they say about school. No, school and I didn't get on in some regards. I did reasonably well, not as well as I or my parents would have liked, though.
Right. And did you have any idea when you were at ride school what you wanted to do when you left, in the way of work or anything?
My parents were very determined that I did a proper job. If I'd have had free range, I would almost certainly have wanted to do something to do with music.
Right.
But things were directed otherwise. If my father had had his way, I would have been an accountant, but it's not my strong point. So I ended up identifying the law as a an acceptable profession from all sides, shall we say.
Right. To keep them happy.
There was an element of that, yeah.
And were you good at that?
The law?
Soliciting,
I didn't qualify as a solicitor, I qualified as a barrister. There are two sides to the profession, and the division's much looser than it used to be, but it very much used to be that solicitors did the office work and the barristers were the ones wearing the cape and the hat, the wig in court. And that's the bit that fancied me when I'd sort of identified law as a profession. So I was very focused on just going for the bar to qualify as a barrister.
So you've qualified as a barrister. Did you decide to do prosecutions or defencing or both?
Well, it's both. Remember, barristers, it's not just about criminal law. That's the face that people see in public. It's about the entire range of legal work.
Right.
For court work, I was criminal barrister, but did both sides. You work for who instructs you.
Right.
But for other things, I did quite a lot of other stuff, paperwork, as it was called, primarily personal injury work, so industrial accidents and things like that.
Did you find that interesting?
Yes. The actual work and the law, fascinating. Some of the ways the profession was organised, particularly back then, I struggled with. It's also, back in that day, you very much had to, you didn't get much support. Now when someone is going through to qualify as a barrister and doing the training session, and there's a sort of equivalent of an apprenticeship known as a pupillage, you almost always will get some sort of financial support. Whereas when I did it, there was no support at all.
Right.
So I had to find some way to keep myself going while I was actually getting to a level where I could earn an income. So I went into teaching. So I was caught during the day and then teaching during the evening. And actually, with some of the issues I had with the way the bar was running and the way I perceived the court system, I found that I moved more towards the teaching and enjoyed that greatly, yes.
So what did you teach? What subjects?
Well, I was teaching law, and primarily I was teaching trainee barristers. By that time, I'd got some experience. I knew what I was doing. And I also was pretty good on some of the areas, the academic areas. So primarily, yeah, I was teaching those who were coming through, had done a law degree, and then needed to do the relevant professional qualification to actually become a barrister, someone who could enter the profession.
Right. So did you do a law degree?
I did, yes. Yeah. Again, that was pretty much what you had to do if you were going to, at that time, if you were going to go on to that, to the legal profession. Now it's much more common to do whatever degree you like and then do a sort of conversion year.
Right.
You have to have a... I'm probably a little bit out of date on how it operates now, but yeah, so I did a straight law degree, then did the bar qualification, which was a year, very academic year then. It's much more practical now. And I also did a master's year as well for 1 year. So I did 5 years in total academic stuff.
A long time, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's if you're enjoying it, it's not a long time.
Good. So you were enjoying it then?
I was, yes. I missed those days.
So did you have any, you can't obviously talk about specifics, did you have any cases that stuck out in your memory?
Some individuals, but yes, I'm not going to identify anyone here.
Absolutely not.
And some individuals on the barrister side as well stuck out perhaps more than the clients.
Right.
I think probably... behaved in more questionable ways than some of the clients did.
I see. Yes, we won't go in. We won't go down that path. So what happened after you've done your pupillage, you've done your teaching, you're in the barrister, what happens next?
There were a lot of strands running alongside each other. So I was, during pretty much the whole of the 90s, I was working as a barrister and teaching at the same time. It got to the point where my father had become very ill and needed to move down to the island to look after him, and Mum had been unwell for some time, so she wasn't in a fit state to care for him as needed. So in 2002, that's when we moved permanently to the island.
Right.
I sort of always kept a base here, but obviously had to be based up in London and Bristol, where I worked for a little while. And so I moved to the island, and that's when I just moved to purely teaching. So I was commuting to London, but that enabled me to look after family at home as well.
So you gave up the barrister bit?
It just sort of fell away.
Right.
As I say, I had struggled with some aspects of the profession. Actually, I was taken on my birthday, strangely enough, to see a play at, I think it was the National Theatre, by a guy called David Hare. I think it was called Murmuring Judges, and it was very much a critique of the legal profession. And I do remember that because I was just watching it and I was just thinking, I see that every day. That sort of thing happens. That sort of stuff that isn't good that this play is criticising, and I don't like it. And that, I think, made me realise that I wasn't in there for the long haul.
Yes. So
as I say, personal circumstances arose where the permanent move to the island, which I'm ever so glad I did, came around. And so I carried on teaching, but as I say, not quite part-time, but commuting up to London and maintaining family at the same time.
It's hard work, isn't it?
I did the commuting for just over 10 years. Yes. it did get a bit of a struggle at times.
It takes its toll, doesn't it?
Yeah, the 5 o'clock ferry in the morning wasn't my favourite.
I bet it wasn't. It wouldn't be my favourite either.
I did manage to perfect the technique of falling asleep at Fratton and waking up at Vauxhall, though.
Right.
So that sort of made up for the very early start, in a way.
The rest of the passengers didn't like the snoring, though, did they? I don't know if you snore or not. I mean, I don't know.
You'd have to ask them.
So what happened after that?
Well, where are we now? So we're talking early 2000s. I suppose the next key point was becoming a parish councillor for the first time.
All right.
So that was 2006. And obviously I've always lived in St Helens, and if people know anything about St Helens, it's the fact that it's got a very large village green.
Yes.
Not, as some people claim, the biggest in the country. It's the second biggest. So we've researched that endlessly. And there were questions over the management of the green and bylaws and so on. And so someone in the village said, he does law, he can help. So I got, I think I was co-opted onto the parish council on the basis I would rewrite the bylaws.
Because you knew about law?
Because I knew about law.
Okay.
So I did, and the council refused to accept them, but the die had been cast by that point. So okay. I was a parish councillor and commuting up to London to work. Father had passed away by that point, so I was still looking after mum. So that's where we were by about 2006.
Not bad going, is it? The parish council work, did you enjoy that?
I did. I found I really enjoyed that. As you might have noted, I've sort of carried on since then. I've been a parish councillor pretty much solidly since 2006, because I think it's important work. It's important to have people looking after the parish and just trying to do their best to make sure those little things, the grass cutting and so on, are done and maintained.
It's the little things that lead to the big things, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, makes it all worthwhile. And you get on with the rest of the team?
I'd like to think I've got a good relationship with everyone I've worked with over the years, yeah.
I should hope so, too.
I don't know if they'd agree, but I'd like to think that.
Yeah. And then what happened?
this is what you would, in legal terms, call examination in chief.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because I thought you were going to cross-examine me, you see. Because when you examine someone in chief, you're not allowed to put words in their mouth.
Right.
They have to tell the story. You're not allowed to lead the witness.
Okay.
So you always say, what happened next? What did you do next? Whereas if you're cross-examining someone, you're putting your case to them. You're trying to get them to say what you want. So this is it. Interesting in legal terms.
I don't want you to say what I want. I want you to say what you want.
But in examination chief, you actually want to get to a particular part in the story. So you do direct.
Well, I don't know what the story is.
Nah, should have done your research. I think a lot of it has been in the papers for some years now. So,
Somewhere along the line, you had a daughter.
Oh, that's already happened. I've missed that one out. Francesca arrived in August 2003, and is the most important thing to me. She's now fully qualified as a midwife working in London, engaged to be married.
Do we approve?
We certainly do. Yes.
Good. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's really remiss of me not to mention that, because, as I say, that was. Well, that was, 2002, Alice and I got married. My father was incredibly ill at that point. It was almost a question of, do we go on the honeymoon? Is he going to be there when we get back? He was, but not for long.
Oh, dear.
And so that was, pretty traumatic. But it wasn't long before he passed away, not long at all, that we found Francesca was on the way.
Right.
Again, quite an emotional time. And as I say, she arrived in August 2003 and, was lots of stories, but I won't embarrass her on air.
Okay.
if we're moving on in professional, personal life, I suppose the next thing is actually becoming not just a parish councillor, but we're not county councillor, so we shouldn't say county councillor, but it's the term we all use. So that was 2009. There was an election coming up, and work was getting a bit fraught at that time. And I actually did move a couple of jobs. And when the election was due, I was actually between work. And it actually seemed like a good idea to, because I had the capacity then, if I just carried on doing the full-time teaching as I've been doing before, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But I got very involved in some local campaigns at that point. And again, there was some local pushing saying you could help sort this out if you actually joined the council, the Isle of Wight Council. So the election came up. I think I probably put my nomination papers in very much last minute because I was not sure about it, and had some wonderful support from the then parish councillor for St Helens, a chap called Pat Joyce, and got in.
Good.
Quite surprisingly, but I did at the first
attempt. Well done you. We'll take a break there now for some adverts. We'll be back in a minute.
Vectis Radio.
Right, we're back now with Jonathan Bacon. We're listening to his really fascinating life story going on here. You have some cars, various cars of, I don't know what you call them, classic cars, would
classic,
you?
Classic, yes.
Are they classic cars?
I don't know.
A car is a car. So.
we've jumped on a few years, and that was 2019. I wasn't a councillor at that point. I'd lost my seat in the 2017 election. I was doing a few other things, including being chair of the AONB, as it was then called, Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty. A brilliant business plan came to me to run a classic car hire business on the island.
Right.
And the means to do that had been found. So I did acquire a collection of cars, went through all the processes. How can these be hired out? How can the business work? Doing the insurance was a very interesting one.
I bet.
And just as it was probably going to be ready to go, COVID hit.
That was no good, was it?
Timing, I mean, a lot of people suffered in business and with various ideas they were developing at that point. So I sold most of them, but a few I couldn't get rid of because I'd got rather attached to them. So it's my recycling project.
Right. So which ones did you hang on to?
I developed a fascination with Lotus cars. Right. So I've retained four of those. One is still a project in the garage, but there's something about them that they're very quirky, and there is that thing, Lotus stands for lots of trouble, usually serious, which is was absolutely the case with some of them, but there are some good ones as well.
Right.
And it's a little, it's a hobby. It's a way to get away from things sometimes.
So are they lotuses or loti?
I'd probably say lotuses because loti sounds really weird.
Doesn't it, Jazz? But they're quite low down, aren't they? So do you have difficulty, but would people
I'm starting to get a bit of difficulty with one of them.
Getting in and out, yes.
Yeah. it's don't often give lifts to people.
No.
Well, you don't often give lifts to people twice.
No. Because they think, no.
I'm not going down there again.
Not doing that again, So, COVID hit. What happened then?
Interesting is the wrong word, but a very fraught time personally. In 2016... a lot of things happened, including my mother dying.
Okay.
And I was a councillor at that point, and that was getting very difficult. But then there was a raft of personal things came up really following mum's death. We had to sell what had been the family home for 40 years, for various reasons that had to be achieved in 8 weeks.
Right.
And that's when I found out how much of a hoarder my mother had been.
Oh dear.
So, I'm in hindsight, I'm really very glad that I wasn't a counsellor at that point in life, because there was a lot of personal stuff that needed to be sorted out, needed to be dealt with, a lot of things to go through.
Supporting itself,
Francesca, who was, exams and applying for and indeed heading up to university. So, there was a sort of 3-4 year period which was, an awful lot going on.
Yeah.
But part of that, I suppose, was I was missing being a counsellor. I was missing doing something I felt I was good at. So when the opportunity came up again in 2021 and a lot of the cracks had been repaired by then, I decided to give it a go and try and get back into the I don't like to call it the political world because I hate the politics side of it, but into the council world.
Yes. And you succeeded?
I did, yes. It was a very odd election because we were still under semi-COVID rules.
Yeah.
And that meant that things like door knocking weren't being done in the same old way. When we had the election count, you could only go into the room when your bit of the count was being done and you were kept in a holding area. And so there were some very strange features of it. Even when we got to the first big council meeting, instead of being in the chamber in County Hall, we were in the Medina Leisure Centre, all set out and separated. It was, which felt like being in an exam hall.
Yes.
So that brought back some memories. But yes, so I did regain the St. Helens seat at that point. I was very pleased to do so.
And so you should be. In between times, between 2017, whenever it was, right the way back to when you became an adult, did you do any travelling around the world?
Not a great deal, because Mum and Dad weren't travellers at all. They, in my lifetime, I can remember them having 2 holidays.
Right.
No, I tell a lie. I know they had a holiday in 1965, which was before I came along, because I've seen all the... They went to Ireland.
Right.
And they had a trip to Cornwall in 1976.
Right.
And we didn't do family holidays otherwise.
What, the hottest year, yes.
Yeah. relatives to visit, I think.
Yes.
But my holidays were, for the summer, pretty much the entire summer holiday, I was sent down to the island, or came down to the island. My grandmother lived in Gurnard. She'd moved there in 1969 with my grandfather, Jack, who suddenly passed away within months of her moving down, and that affected her very badly. And I think part of it was, well, I think my parents quite liked not having me hanging around for the summer, but also my grandmother really liked to have someone there with her, and that was a period of 5-6 weeks, whatever the summer holidays were then, when I could just be there, and she was sort of second mum, and that's when I fell in love with the island, because we always used to Southern Vectis used to do weekly rover tickets, didn't they?
Yes.
So we'd every other week we'd get one of those, and it would be going to the local Look at Brook, going to the Wax Museum, going to Carisbrook Castle, all the usual culprits, but also travelling around on the bus, doing the runs along the military road and whatever, and just developing a massive love for the island at that point. And so it was interesting when Mum and Dad decided. Dad used to have a shop in little place in outside Reading called Shinfield, and he decided to give that up, and the island was the obvious place, because obviously they'd come down fairly regularly to see my grandmother, and I think it had, particularly for mum, it had a pull. Not quite so sure if dad certainly fell in love with the island when we were here, but yes, so there was a long road leading to living on the island, but it's really down to my parents' dislike of going on holiday.
Okay.
But yeah, I've not travelled greatly over the years. I have been to Italy a few times. Had a wonderful holiday. There are a few places I'd like to go. Had a wonderful holiday last year. Norway.
Oh right.
Went up pretty much as far as you can go on the European mainland in Norway, and that's of the few holidays I've had. That's one of the best ones.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So, what did you like about Norway particularly?
I just the rugged nature. It really was just, I found a fascinating, at the north part of it, the further south you get, it gets a bit more touristy. We spent a bit of time in Bergen and it was pretty much overrun with tourists, much like some of the places here are in the summer.
Yeah.
But you go somewhere like, I'm useless at names. We started off, because we do one of these little boats that just goes around the fjords down the coast. And the place we started off, I'm kicking myself, I can't remember the name, but you're just on the Russian border.
Right.
So all the signs are in English, Norwegian and Russian, just in case. but then you'd sort of leave that, and it's those big, open, barren areas, just the reindeer wandering around, and it's just fascinating. It's just the feel of the place. It's great. West White times 10.
Right. So it's nice and quiet then.
Incredibly, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to get away sometimes and just get away from the noise and the bustle.
And the scenery, nice.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of trees in places, obviously, because it really is, you are, next stop is the North Pole.
Right.
There's a little place called Nordkap, which is... They built a little sort of globe monument there, and there's a visitor centre, and so that is the furthest point on Northern Europe. Trouble is, a few years after they built it, they found, actually, no, it's the nearest point to Northern Europe's 200 yards over there, but we built it now, so we'll pretend. But a lot of that sort of, and there's a lot of the feel of the Scandinavian art and culture. Didn't have enough time there. Need to go back.
So would you go back?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When? Have you decided?
I have no idea.
You haven't decided.
The other thing we've got on the list to do is something I did way years ago, but again, and sort of similar vibe, is go back to some of the Scottish islands, the Outer Hebrides. I had a very wonderful holiday there. Crumbs, 25 years ago, 30 years ago.
Right.
So that's on the list as well.
So where did you go for your honeymoon?
Honeymoon was Bali.
All right.
I managed to get amoebic dysentery. I think I was facing the wrong way when a wave came in.
Right.
And so there were some fascinating bits of that holiday, but also not. It wasn't all great.
No.
Not for any reason to do with the company.
No, I can understand that. We're going to take another break now after that, and we'll come back in a minute.
Vectis Radio.
Right, we're back again with Jonathan, and he's a lot better now, we've decided. So you're in the council, and you're doing the stuff that you like, and...
It's not all stuff one likes. Some stuff is because you have to do it.
Well, yes, but you like being a councillor because you're helping the people of the island.
I do. That sometimes doesn't sound great when you say it, but it is very rewarding to actually be trying, I'm not saying we're always succeeding, but trying to do things to benefit your residents in your wards, people more widely across the island, businesses, tourism, whatever it is, and just the ecology as well, the island itself.
Yes.
It is a unique place in the truest sense of the word, and it needs a bit of help and some protection, and it's not always getting it. But sorry, I'm going off on one there. But yeah, I do this because I enjoy it, and I'd like to think I can do some positive stuff.
And make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Do you do much reading? Do you read books? Do you get time to read?
Reading's not really a hobby because everything I've done has involved a lot of reading. So reading has become work. You know, if you're doing a legal case, you can get a bundle of papers sometimes the night before. You've got to read that. You've got to be on top of it. You've got to be able to ask questions in court the next morning, interview the client, whatever it is. And similarly now, sometimes we get horrendously large bundles of paper in the council. And so reading feels much more like work. I do try and have a... It's that Paul Armfield song, The Books Beside My Bed.
Yes.
There's a big pile and I do go through them. I tend to prefer more factual stuff, histories, and particular periods of history. So I'm not a great one for novels. I've been trying to read Brave New World for years and finally got round to it last year, and I wish I hadn't because it's a really very dark ending.
Yes, there are some books that you just can't get into, isn't it? Like The Hobbit. I cannot get into The Hobbit. I can't get past the first three pages. So.
I did read that years and years ago. I don't need to read it again.
No. It's all about sand and stuff, and that's it. Anyway, I'm not talking about me. So if you're not reading, what else are you doing in your leisure time, assuming you have any?
It's a bit of a limited commodity at times, but music's always been my thing.
Yep.
As I think I said earlier, if I'd had a little more self-determination, the ability to direct what I'd done, I would have loved to have studied music, learnt instruments properly. I've taught myself the guitar after a fashion. After a long time of intending, I'm taking piano lessons at the moment.
Right.
I've got a wonderful teacher, Zara in Ryde, and that's really fun. That's a good escape and things, but also just listening. And obviously that's turned into part jointly running a record shop as well,
yes.
Which is one of those dreams men have when they get to a certain age, I think, which has become reality. But, yeah, music's a thing. Music's a thing.
So when you're playing your piano, well, not your piano, but your piano lesson,
yeah.
what tunes do you get to play? Are you playing the 1812 yet? Or?
We're working on the Moonlight Sonata.
Right. Quite the 1812.
Well, the 1812 is more an orchestral piece, of course. But yes.
Don't be pedantic.
But I'm good at being pedantic. That's one of the things you learn when you become a lawyer. But we sort of, at the other end of the scale, just to get the fingers working and make things easier, we've been doing Hallelujah, Let It Be, Hey Jude, things like that, just bashing out the chords.
Because
the other thing I picked up a few years ago was drums. So a reasonably competent drummer, but that was really started because it's a good release.
So it could be a one-man band then?
I'm not sure how you play piano and the drums at the same time.
Well, you have it's rather difficult, wouldn't it? Unless you carry the piano on your back, in which case you couldn't play it, could you?
Yeah, so I'll learn to play the guitar with my feet, which, given my feet, I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, I don't know anything about your feet. So the record shop's going okay?
It's good, yeah. It's fun. And the other aspect of that is one of the things I've got involved in over the years is... event organising events, being involved in event organisation, mm-hmm. and I was particularly involved in what was supposed to be three events celebrating the 50th anniversary of the original Isle of Wight festivals.
Right.
Of course, the third one was due to be in 2020. That got cancelled for the obvious reason.
Yep.
But that developed a very keen interest in the musical history of the island, not just the festivals, more widely. So part of the shop project is to develop and display an archive of the amazing musical history you've got here on the island.
Yes.
Just the people you find out are connected with the place, the things that happened. You know, one of the greatest music hall stars of the Victorian era, Annie Adams, was from the island. And there are many more examples like that. And so it's a little in abeyance, man. We need to get a decent space to actually have a permanent exhibition. There's a few ideas how we might do that, but there's a brilliant history and story to be told about the music on the island. We have the festivals, but even laying that aside, it does seem to be, and with art and other things, a lot of creative things, the island does seem to generate or attract, whatever the appropriate term is, a lot of very creative people who produce a lot of very great things, and you know, writing, even inventions and so on. It's amazing.
We've got a huge number of talented people here on the island.
We have, and it's
not just musical, they're writers and all sorts.
And going back through history as well, you have that. And there's something about this place that fosters that.
Yeah.
And I think it's recognised more now than it used to be, but it's probably still not as supported as it should be.
No.
There are some excellent things, you know, like Platform One and so on, that do support talented, not just youngsters, older people as well. But it's something we could do better. You can always do things better, but something it'd be really nice to grow as much as physically possible.
But then there's always something to learn, isn't there? So you learn how to do this and how to do that and where to do all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Life's a school, isn't it? Every day.
You're always learning.
Always. If you don't learn, then you've stopped, really, haven't you? You haven't scribbled anything.
You like I haven't to needed scribble. To.
No, that's good. So, personally, what's next for you? Not work-wise, but personally.
I think what's next for me personally is probably going to be defined a little by work at the moment.
Right.
I've obviously taken on a new role and there's a settling in process and a getting to grips with it process. But it's very much about ensuring there's a balance between that and personal life. I'm not sure that's something I've been overly good at in the past, even back to when I was a barrister. It's, you know, when you're a criminal barrister travelling around the country, you turn up in the office in the centre of London, 5 o'clock in the evening, finished your case. Oh, sir, you're off to Sheffield tomorrow morning.
Oh, right.
Here's the 200-page brief. Oh, great. Well, that's the evening.
I'll read it while I'm driving along.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you had to get the train, really, if you go to get a read.
Of course you did, yes.
But, yeah, so I'm probably a bit of a workaholic, but, yeah, I think we need to settle into what's happening with the new role, but make sure to keep a bit of personal space. There's a few things in the diary that are coming up that'll be nice, concerts and events.
Yes.
And the other thing I've been involved in, we haven't got around to mentioning, is carnivals.
Yes.
So there's a carnival float to be built.
Right.
We know what we're doing.
You're not doing it all by yourself, are you?
Absolutely not.
No.
It's been a little bit hand-to-mouth with some of the carnival, with our carnival and some of them over the years, but it's one of those odd traditions we have in the island. Was it 15 parades or something during the space of a few weeks? We must be mad, but it's great fun. People enjoy it, and it's a tradition to be maintained. So, yeah, so I will be there with a paintbrush and a screwdriver, probably up until the last minute. I think everyone who's involved in the carnivals would, if you ask them on the first one, I think it's Newport again this year, there's always going to be a bit of wet paint somewhere
of
on
course,
the float.
Yeah. Preferably not all over you.
It does happen.
Do you enjoy cooking?
I do, yes.
Yeah? What do you like to cook?
Oh, crumbs. Probably Italian. Indian and Italian, if I'm cooking.
Yeah.
I'm not a great one for following recipes.
No.
I sort of know the basics and then what's in the cupboard.
Yeah.
But I find that is a good form of relaxation. You get home in the evening and what have I got? What can I make with that? And that's a nice little escape.
Yeah.
And probably with some music on in the background.
Of course. Bottle of wine?
Well, it has to be done occasionally.
Well, of course it does. Every now and again. So we like cooking. We're not over keen on reading. There must be something decorating. Do you like decorating?
Do I like decorating?
Well, some people love it and they just love decorating.
When it has to be done, I've started doing a bit of woodwork recently.
All right.
And that's connected with the shop. So we bought some record racks for the shop and then the guy who was supplying them went out of business.
Oh, dear.
We hadn't got the full set. So I've been taught the basics of woodwork so I can make record racks. And that's extending into making a few other things.
Good.
And I suppose I do like one thing I've done in all the houses I've owned over the last few years is I like to do a wallpaper mural on the wall.
Right.
So
what does that involve?
That was last one, getting old atlases.
Yes.
Snip them up and just turn them into a wall.
Oh, right.
Paper the wall. And with the shop, we're opening a second smaller branch in Ryde in the arcade. And as part of the helping that out and the decoration, I've done a mural of old Melody Makers and what have you from the festival years.
Oh, right.
On the wall opposite the shop, because the guy who runs it, John, wanted a bit of decoration there. I said, I could do an idea. So, yeah, that was good fun, actually. So if anyone wants a wallpaper mural, that when the council business goes, if it goes wrong again, then that might be the next trade to get into.
Gardening?
I'm not a great gardener. My mother was a massive horticulturalist and knew so much, but it never really rubbed off. I think she'd quite liked me to have been a gardener in the same way my dad would like me to be a sportsman, but that was never going to happen. So I like the wild garden feel.
Yes.
Yeah. That's as anyone who comes to visit will notice.
You're always very dapper.
Am I?
Well dressed, yes. And I find it fascinating that you like to wear all these different colours and different socks, because they don't match, do they?
Do you know, I think
that
might...
Is there a reason for that?
I think that might be a reaction to when I was at the bar, and I think it's still the case, that the dress code is very tight.
Right.
I mean, when I was teaching trainee barristers... You'd be doing their advocacy exercise. You had to run them through an exercise where they were presenting something in court. But you would be judging them on their dress as well.
All right.
So brown shoes, 3 points off, for example. You do not wear brown shoes with a suit.
Okay.
And for gentlemen, always your midriff has to be covered. So it was either a waistcoat or a double-breasted suit, even though they're massively out of fashion, I think. But in court, of course, you just had to be plain shirt. You've got the wig, you've got the robe. It's designed to make sure that you are just an officer of the court. You're presenting something. You're not being judged on how you look. Everyone should look the same. And it's also a good disguise as well. I've certainly seen a couple of cases where the judge has walked out of a court without his robes, and the family who's... son, brother, father, he's just sentenced to 4 years, have not recognised him. So it's a useful disguise as well. But I think it was my first pupil master said, you know, there has to be some way of having a little bit of personality. And the thing I always remember, he said, well, when I'm in the Court of Appeal, I always wear my Mickey Mouse underpants. So that was his little fight against...
I'm not going to ask you about your underpants.
No, and I'm not going to tell you either. but yes, it was really ridiculous. There was a very famous judge, Mr. Justice Harmon, who made the press for various things. He was the one who was looking after the Maxwell Brothers case in the day. And a friend of mine in Chambers went into his courtroom for an application one day, and he was starting to talk, and... the judge said, I can't hear you. Oh, I'm sorry, my lord. No, I can't hear you. He realised this chap was real old school, and Richard, the barrister, had a striped shirt on.
Oh, dear.
And that was beyond the pale. So it really was a very weird and tightly constrained system back in the day.
So therefore he didn't want to listen to him then?
He refused.
Oh, right.
it had to be a... I don't know how much money was wasted in that. It had to be adjourned, and he went back with a white shirt.
Oh.
And to say, that's one of the reasons why I reacted against certain elements of the legal system.
Fair enough. Can't be bad, can it? It's been lovely talking to you and hearing all about your life so far.
I'm glad you said so far. I hope there's a bit left to go.
I hope so. I think we're all done. Thank you, Jonathan.
If you would like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts. Vectis Radio.